Here's Mr. American Dream. Here's Mr. American Dream.
And you're listening to 90.7 FM
WGXC
Agra.
The Athens Cultural Center invites you to join us each month for our first Friday happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. Come enjoy free wine and nibbles amongst rotating works of art in a welcoming atmosphere for all. The Athens Cultural Center is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to uplift creative voices within our community and beyond through access to the arts, educational classes, and other programming such as performance and film screenings. Find us at 24 2nd Street in Athens, New York, and online at athensculturalcenter.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by MPAC, presenting Lori Anderson in a talk featuring her newest major stage work, ARC, on Thursday, August 29th at 6 p.m. on the campus of RPI in Troy, New York. More information can be found at mpac.rpi.edu.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Meredith Cooey in Catskill, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable.
the wings of every bird are memories that fill the hollow bone. Flexible as flame or as the rain, they find their way without being shown. You can call it fate or instinct or a sixth sense, or a tumbling down, a failing of alternatives that are too immense.
Bird's eyes view what I can't see, and I can't know. Pterodactyls and the fractal form, and a lack of vertigo.
The truth of proof is in the vertigo.
While you're in the air, dodging the abyss like this, where falling into it is more than I dare. I'm not sure my wingspan reaches quite far enough, but I have a plan to tumble unrestrainedly and see where I end up.
The truth, the proof, the rope and the news, the roots, the roof. The door, the don't and the do, the me and the you. The grass, the gas, the grunt and the groan. Alone again and again. The bone, the rain and the flame. Nothing's the same.
You are listening to Waveforms WGXC Radio 19.7 FM in Catskill, Hudson. This program is Bequency and my name is Mayuko. Bequency invites the local community to be inspired by the joy, beauty, and wisdom that bird enthusiasts find in the nature of our neighborhoods. Every episode features an interview with local bird people, plus a freeform mix of sounds made by birds and humans inspired by birds. Sorry about the little late beginning of today's show. I had a little bit of technical glitches, but I hope everything is fine. I feel like I'm sounding a little strange, but hopefully you can understand what I'm saying. Otherwise, I hope you're having a good morning and good afternoon, it depends where you are, and good weekend. Mine started with a wood thrush in my backyard this morning, which is kind of cool. I'm not like in the deep of any like woods. I have some natures around because I'm in the Hudson Valley, but I don't usually see wood thrush in the backyard, so that was pretty cool. Great morning. And we also started today's show with a song titled Every Bird by David Garland, a local artist, and this was from his new album. I guess I could say new album. It's a rework, I guess, a new version of his same title album that's titled Noise in You. The original was from 2007, and this reworked new version is gonna be released on September 5th. And if you're a local person, you can enjoy music by David and his friends live while having a morning coffee at this sound event called Music for Furniture, a weekly thing, I believe, Monday morning, 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Cafe Joust on May Street in Catskill. So you might want to check that out if you live in Catskill. And now we're going to listen to my interview with Catherine J. Snyder, a Claverick native who has spent decades studying the behavior, ecology, and distribution of birds. An award-winning author, teacher, and conservationist. She's a past president of the New York State Ornithological Association, and there are a bunch of things I can ask her because she has such a long experience with birds her whole life. But in this interview, I really wanted to focus asking her about her book, which is titled Birding the Hudson Valley, a thorough guidebook that provides all the knowledge you need to start birding, including where to go, what to bring, how to join the birders community, and more. Her insights give us a deeper understanding of the natural landscapes that are home to the birds we see, and encourage us to support positive changes in conservation work. So I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening. This is Frequency.
My name's Catherine Schneider. I'm retired now, but I've spent most of my career doing things like teaching college courses. I also work for conservation organizations and for state and federal government on a lot of different conservation projects. I'm the author of a book, and right now I co-chair the steering committee for the New York State Breeding Bird Atlas.
And specifically wanted to ask you about Birding the Hudson Valley, the book you authored, A Guide to Birds and Bird Watching in the Hudson Valley. I guess I'm going to introduce the book a little bit here. So although an estimated 400,000 Hudson Valley residents feed, observe, or photograph birds, the vast majority of New Yorkers enjoy their bird watching activities mostly around the home. And your book encourages those people to expand their horizons, going outside beyond their backyard and do more birding out there. So what led you to that idea? Like, what did you make an observation that a lot of people are not, like, how did you come to that observation?
So people are basically interested in birds. They come to bird talks, they watch PBS, they have bird feeders for the most part. But if you walk around most neighborhoods, and I spend a lot of time doing that kind of thing when I'm bird watching, you notice that there are a lot of empty bird feeders. And you kind of have to ask why. You know, why don't they keep their feeders full? And I think that it's partly because they get tired. Maybe they get tired of filling the feeders, but I also think that to some extent they get tired of seeing the same birds over and over again. Mm. And what you have to realize is that at a bird feed, you're only going to see a certain number of birds. Not all birds come to bird feeders. Generally, things like bald eagles, for example, which are fairly common in the Hudson Valley, don't come to bird feeders.
Right.
And I was also, they rarely see anything, basically, but I was basically, they don't see much new, is what I'm saying. I was aware of this study that was done in 2011. I was working in state government at the time, and there was a survey of fishing, hunting, and wildlife-associated recreation that was done by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And they do it every 5 years, and basically they do this study to justify funding for state and federal agencies. So they needed to show that bird watching and wildlife watching and hunting and fishing and those sorts of things actually generated revenue and deserved to be funded by taxpayer dollars. And in that study, there's a great deal of information about, you know, where people do their wildlife observation. And it's a national study, but you can extrapolate the numbers down to New York State and Hudson Valley, and shows that about 88% of the bird watching that's done is done from people's homes or on their own property, and about 38% is done away from home. Those numbers don't add up to 100% because some of the people that watch birds at the theaters also watch birds away from home. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that just told me that people were not getting out there and becoming real birders. They were just bird watchers in their backyards. Mm-hmm. So I think there's an important difference between being a bird watcher and being a birder. Bird watchers are basically less serious birders. I mean, I think we all start out a lot of the time at bird feeders. And in fact, when I taught ornithology in college, we would start in January. And I would always start my class, I give them a bird feeder and say, set up this bird feeder and see what you see. It's a very good introduction to becoming a birder. Mm-hmm. But after a while, you're not going to see anything new. So we would hope that the people that are watching birds at a bird feeder are at least writing down what they see, trying to identify what they see, maybe using binoculars. But they're not going to see the birds that they would see if they left their feeder and visited other habitats and other places. So birders, unlike bird watchers, actually go out looking for particular birds. They're a bit more serious. It's really being a birder is really a different animal than a bird watcher in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. They go to particular places called hotspots and travel to see birds, whereas otherwise, when you're just a bird watcher, you see them while you're doing your gardening, for example, or sitting drinking hot cocoa in the winter at your kitchen table. Birders tend to target species that they want to see. They're really interested in keeping data and building bird lists and seeing new and different birds. So I wanted to help people make the transition from being a bird watcher that basically did all their bird watching in their backyard or very close to home, and the person that actually goes out and observes birds at different places and different habitats with targeted species in mind.
Mm-hmm. I see. So that's where you get this very specific number of 400,000 residents.
You can figure out how many of those people are in New York State and mm-hmm. how many people of them live in the Hudson Valley,
right,
and use those percentages to figure out how many of them are actually seeing birds mm-hmm. in the Hudson Valley.
Uh-huh. So it's interesting because I think writing beginner-friendly guidance can be challenging, mm-hmm. as it's not always easy for mm-hmm. any experienced person. You know, you can't really imagine what people don't know or
yeah.
what they are interested in learning even. And your book covers every basic thing a beginner needs to know with great clarity, mm-hmm. you know, where to go or how to find binoculars or ethics around birding and mm-hmm. sharing sightings.
My insights as to what was keeping people from going birding come partly from the students that I taught at mm-hmm. Hudson Valley Community College. Their students are kind of a captive audience, but for them, one of the most difficult things was getting up early. Well, they didn't have any choice in my class because it was an 8 o'clock class, so they had to get up early. Mm-hmm. But I also got some insights from leading field trips and giving talks. And the kinds of questions I was always asked over and over again, like, what binoculars do I need for birding? And people,
yeah.
my students would come to class with opera glasses.
Uh-huh.
And opera glasses really don't cut it for bird watching. Mm-hmm. So I had a stash of garage sale binoculars that I would distribute to them a lot of the time. But what they needed to know is that you need a particular kind of binoculars for bird watching, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. You can get them used. You can get them at yard sales.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to have ones that have enough magnification and are appropriate for that kind of observation, because they make binoculars for lots of different things, you know, for operas and for sporting events or for navigating on the ocean and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So people also want to know, I would be asked questions about how can I see more birds. Especially in winter, they would ask questions about their bird feeders. If you only have one kind of bird feeder, you're likely only going to get a certain suite of birds. But if you have different kinds of bird feeders with different kinds of food, and you offer the food in different situations, some on the ground, some on a platform, some in a tube feeder, you can get a better diversity of birds. So And they would also ask questions about how to control squirrels. I mean, these are you don't have to shoot the squirrels. I want to save the squirrels. So I wanted to put that kind of advice in the book.
Right.
And then I think another barrier that keeps people from going out birding away from home is that nature is scary to some people. People that have moved here from New York City haven't been exposed to nature. There's things like ticks and poison ivy and snakes, and you can get lost. Mm-hmm. So I think it was important to be upfront about the fact that nature deserves respect, but these are not good reasons for not going birding. Mm-hmm. And I also think that people are a little shy. I mean, everything I've learned about birds, I've learned from other people. And I think that's a very important part of learning to become a birder. So learning to connect with other birders is really important, especially ones that know more than you, because that's where you'll find a mentor or a birding buddy that can teach you things that you don't already know. So there's stuff in the book about the different bird clubs that are in the Hudson Valley and how bird clubs are really, really welcoming groups and how they really love what they are doing and want to teach people about birds. So there's a little bit about how not to make a fool of yourself on your first birding trip in there, but it's in general, birders are really welcoming, and I think it's really important for new bird watchers who want to become birders to connect with other birders who know more than they do. I mean, even if they only tell you on a field trip where the nearest bathroom is, that's valuable information.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you can go on to the higher levels of birding. The people that lead bird walks a lot of the time can identify birds by their vocalizations. So I would get a lot of questions about how do I learn how to identify birds by song? Mm-hmm. And there are that I put a fair amount of that information in the book.
In the book, yes.
Yeah.
You're listening to Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC. If you're just joining us, my today's guest is Catherine J. Schneider, the author of Birding in the Hudson Valley, a field guide that encourages bird enthusiasts to expand their horizons. Thank you for listening.
So that gave you the clarity, because I was really impressed by how thorough it was. And it's, you know, shocking how beginners don't know. Like, I went on without binoculars for many years.
Yeah,
it's like, I can't believe I didn't get one.
Yeah.
But that's how much it doesn't occur to you if you don't know.
People think you have to spend a lot of money to get binoculars,
that
and you don't. I mean, there are an amazing number of binoculars at garage sales because grandma was a bird watcher and grandma died, and the next generation's maybe not doing birding. So I pick up binoculars at garage sales all the time. There's places like eBay, for example, mm-hmm. where you can get binoculars. You just have to know what you're looking for. You have to make sure you get the right magnification and something that's in decent shape, but you don't have to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
Of course, most of us eventually do. I mean, we graduate to our next binoculars, and we get to be 40 and say, I need my penultimate pair of binoculars for my next 40 years of birding. So that's when you start spending money. But
right.
you can start out with a very basic pair of binoculars and see birds just fine.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some people, like, gear shame you sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And that's silly. That's silly, because as long as you can see the birds, when I see someone with a pair of opera glasses on a field trip,
right.
I kind of put them on my mental list of, I got to find this person another set of binoculars.
Uh-huh.
But because they have to learn to use the binoculars that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that, I mean, a lot of people try and scan with binoculars, and if you want to use binoculars properly, you have to see the bird first with your eyes and then put the binoculars up in focus.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't realize that. So learning to use the binoculars, you can even learn to use binoculars at a bird feeder fairly easily. We call it getting on the bird, and getting on the bird is a real talent. It takes some practice.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's why, because I was talking about how I used to get like a motion sickness mm-hmm. from looking into binoculars, mm-hmm. and that's what I was told, that, oh, you're not using
mm-hmm.
good binoculars. Mm-hmm. That's not mm-hmm. like high-end or whatever. You can't afford high-end.
You don't need high-end.
And you don't hardly mm-hmm. need high-end. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's really encouraging, like all these mm-hmm. having these information.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So what impact would you wish this book to have in the long term? Like, what positive changes would you like to see in the world from getting more people, like you said, transitioning into birders from bird watchers?
I think if people get away from home and start to really appreciate birds, see lots of different kinds of birds in different habitats, they will come to love birds. And when you love birds, you want to learn more about them, and you want to understand their needs. And to me, that's what's important. That's what I hope, that people will not just learn to identify birds, they will learn to understand what birds need. And to me, that translates into protection of the environment. And I'm basically a conservationist at heart. Mm-hmm. So if you love birds and you want to keep seeing them, you should be interested in protecting the environment. And that's what I hope this book will do.
Hmm. Maybe more people will join the Citizen Science Project.
I hope so.
Too. Mm-hmm. I think I heard it in your lecture that you were talking about a quote of
Baba Duim.
Yeah,
it says, in the end, we will... I can't remember the whole quote off the top of my head, but he says that in the end, we will only protect what we understand and love. And so that's what I'm hoping, that
right.
people will come to understand more what birds need. There are an awful lot of people that get hung up on the idea of ticking off birds and keeping lists and things like that, and mm-hmm. never really learn the biology of birds. And I think that if you watch birds long enough and you hang out with birders, you will learn more about bird biology. I mean, there are people that don't understand that birds migrate. There are people that don't understand that the breeding requirements of birds, and that food is critically important to birds. So I'm hoping that if you see birds most often at places where they're feeding, mm-hmm. so people will start to realize that they really shouldn't cut down that poison ivy, because it's important fall food for the birds, you know?
Mm-hmm. I thought about that quote after I heard it in your lecture.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a little bit like harsh.
Mm-hmm.
In some way, and maybe not harsh is not the word, but like people throwing out word love so easily,
mm-hmm.
especially in this
yeah.
country, I mm-hmm. feel. But that it states that, you know, you can't love something if you don't know it, and
mm-hmm.
if you
mm-hmm.
you would only know it if you're being taught, or if you
right.
are willing to learn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like, love takes some work. You can't just like
right.
like I love hot dogs. You can't just love
no birds. Right.
yeah, but that work is not like an obligation. You can have
mm-hmm.
so much fun
mm-hmm.
and just the joy of improving yourself almost.
Mm-hmm. Well, birds give us a lot of enjoyment. Can you imagine a world without birds?
Yeah,
you know, I just
really
can't imagine a world without birds. And I think we take them for granted, like we take for granted a lot of things that are really important to us. But if you become familiar with them and learn about them, I think that you will come to appreciate what they need and what's important to them.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been a birder since you were little?
My mom was a birder. I mean, I can remember us looking at a pileated woodpecker in the backyard she was not a professional birder at all, but we were trying to decide if it was a ivory-billed woodpecker or a pileated woodpecker.
Uh-huh.
And of course, once you get out the book and you look at the range map, we came to the conclusion that it was a pileated woodpecker. But I came about my appreciation of birds as a kid because my dad was from the Adirondacks, and my mother kind of adopted the Adirondacks as a place for us to observe nature.
Mm-hmm.
We were four kids in my family. I think we drove her crazy. She would kick us outside most of the time. So I was part of an outdoorsy family. You know, we grew up climbing mountains and camping and that sort of stuff. So we've always had bird feeders and bird identification guides around the house when I was growing up. But it wasn't until I went to college that I realized, gee, maybe you really could make a living studying birds.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. I took courses at Cornell in animal behavior and ornithology, and that was when I realized that you could actually have a career studying birds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This pileated incident, that was in your Virginia home, or?
Oh, no, when I was a kid growing up in Claverick in the Hudson Valley.
Claverick.
Yeah.
That's also where Bill Cook is from.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so Chris Franks told me that you were in the same class or same
Not the same
school?
Class, but we grew up in the same town in Claverick.
Uh-huh.
And I knew Bill Cook when he was a little kid. It's interesting. He went to the same church I went to.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Claverick, the town of Claverick, produced two ornithologists.
That's right. Yeah.
And you both taught at Columbia Green.
No, he taught at Columbia Green. I taught at Hudson Valley Community College, and I also taught at the University of Richmond. He's about 10 years older than me, but went off to the University of Michigan and studied birds out there and then came back to the Hudson Valley. So I got there as a somewhat different route. I went to Cornell and then got a PhD at Princeton. So I lived in Virginia for a while and then came back to the Hudson Valley.
Hmm. Well, clever can be really proud in this world of birders. Okay, so you're going to lead the walk, the bird walk at Nutton Hook in September.
Right.
I'll announce all the dates and all the details in the mic break. Mm-hmm. But what can participants expect to possibly see?
Well, Nutton Hook's a really nice site. It's on the Hudson River, which it's on the Hudson River, and then it has fields and woods, so it has a variety of habitats. But because it's on the Hudson River and we're going at pretty much the peak of fall migration in late September, can be sure we'll see eagles. We usually get fish crows and osprey. I'm hoping we'll get great egrets, which are being seen on the river a lot now. I don't know if they'll hang around that long, but there should be things like cormorants and gulls and all the usual river birds. And then because migration's going on, it's not so late that there won't be warblers. There still should be some warblers hanging around. Kinglets should be coming through. And of course some thrushes, which maybe, I think I looked at my list from last year and there was a Swainson thrush on it, which was pretty good. And it's late enough to get some of the later migrants, things like some of the sparrows. So in late September, you can see the first white-throated sparrows. I had a white-crowned sparrow in late September there. And there will be raptors like broadwings and, of course, red-tailed hawk and red-shouldered hawk. So the early sparrow migrants are things you would expect, and some raptor migration as well.
So sparrows migrating, and they're going to stay here over the winter.
Some of them come for the winter, yeah.
But egrets, they just...
I think what we're seeing with the egrets... You know, egrets are not very common here at all normally, and every fall we seem to get an influx of them, and I think it's post-breeding dispersal. You know, egrets are colonial water birds, and they breed in big colonies, especially in places like, Long Island and the lower Hudson. There's big colonies down there. And I think the babies get kicked out and they start exploring the river and things like that. So we always see an influx of great egrets in the fall.
So I see a lot of them in New York City.
There's big colonies down there on the Dredge Spoil Islands.
And they travel south how far?
Oh, I don't know exactly, but you certainly see great egrets in Florida. I mean, they are not generally migratory. Even the other members of that family, the herons, for example, great blue herons, we see them around here in winter once in a while. They just need open water, When the water freezes, they leave, but they don't go very far. And egrets generally are not considered migratory. They'll do short distance movements, basically based on the availability of food. And I think that that's what we're seeing with these egrets that we see in the fall.
I see. Okay, so that's what people can expect to see.
I think so.
All right, so thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks to Cassie for this wonderful interview. You can find the book that we discussed in today's interview, that titled Birding in the Hudson Valley. You can find it online and also local bookstores like Oblong. I think it makes a great gift for someone who who has a bird feeder at home and they may want to, venture out. And as we mentioned in the conversation, there is an upcoming bird walk led by Cassie in September, which is happening on Saturday, again September 21st. At Nutton Hook, it's near Stuyvesant in Columbia County, and you can meet the group at 8 a.m. in the parking area by the pavilion, which is the west of the railroad tracks and the buildings on Ice House Road. You can find more information at www.allendevoebirdclub.org. www.allendevoebirdclub.org. Also, if you are in Columbia County and you feel close to Hillsdale and want to start burning, in addition to buying her book, you can also join an event hosted by, again, Alan DeVoe Bird Club in collaboration with New York Audubon and Rosian Library in the first week of September. There will be a, well, first a talk event, Birding 101 at the library, and then there's a walk at Rheinstrom Hill Audubon Sanctuary, which is also in Hillsdale. I interviewed David Decker, who is the land steward of Rheinstrom Hill, in the very first episode of this show, Bequency, in 2023. So if you're interested in listening to his interview or any other past episodes of this show, you can find them at bequency@tumblr.com. You can maybe just Google Bequency and Tumblr and then it should come up. And again, the Birding 101 talk and walk, you can find more information at rosianlibrary.org/adult-programs. rosianlibrary.org has all the information. And I believe you want to make a reservation. There was a tickets information. So you can find that again, rosianlibrary.org. I'll be posting the links relevant to today's show in the show notes that I will be posting on WGXC website and also, again, at the bequency@tumblr.com. So, hope you can start birding if you wanted to. This is a great time to start. And, alright, now time for more birdie music of the month. We're going to listen to Lark Song, released from the UK label Folklore Tapes in 2023. And just to give you an idea of what it is, for the 2023 British Textile Biennale, collaborative artists Nick Jordan and Jacob Cartwright created a new film, Lark Song, and textiles installation in Goodshaw Chapel, a non-conformist Baptist chapel established by textile workers and farm laborers in 1760. And the stuff we're going to listen to is the musical score. The musical score for the film has been created by David Chatham Barker, Mary Stark, Sam McLaughlin, Bridget Hayden, and Emily Oldfield. In addition to traditional instruments, recorders, piano, and harmonium, sounds are derived from adapted spinning wheels, music boxes, and film projectors, and these recordings have been captured during a performance installation in the chapel alongside experimental exploration in the studio. Few recordings captured in and around the chapel feature the bird calls of lark, curlew, and thrush, as well as wind through the trees and the trickling well. I found it quite beautiful. I hope you will enjoy this music too. Thanks for listening. This is Bequency on Wavefarms WGXC.
John Nuttall lies here and that's enough. The candle's out, also the snuff. His soul's with God, you need not fear. And what remains is interred here. Thank you.
John Nuttall lies here, and that's enough. The candle is out, also the snuff. His soul is with God.
That was a track titled Movement 1 from the musical score for the film titled Lark Song. And I would like to play one more birdie music, which is a track titled The Birds. And it's from a compilation titled Communal Music Volume 3, released from AEMC Records, which is based in Netherlands. And this track is by Guy Richardson. And but I don't think I have time to come back, so I will say goodbye now. You're listening to Waveforms WGXC 90.7 FM. This program has been Bequency, and I have been Mayuko. Bequency airs every fourth Saturday of the month at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. So I will be back on, I believe, September 28th. So I hope you come back and join me again. Until then, we'll have a great weekend and have great birding. And see you next time. Stay tuned for Guy Richardson, The Birds.
Thank you. Thank you.